morning, and thanks for tuning in KSLM this fine day here on 104.3 FM and 1220 AM as we now present Good Morning Salem with Stacy Ann.
Good morning, Salem. Hello, I'm Stacy Ann. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, together on this November 10th. It's a Tuesday, and it's been one week already since the election. Can you hardly believe it? So glad to have you tuning in. You're listening to a wonderful radio station that wants to keep you in the loop, keep you encouraged, engaged, and certainly educate you so we can be empowered to make a difference in our day-to-day lives with those around us. And certainly our message here is one of a conservative message that really wants to engage our culture with truth. And it's been interesting for me over the last even 24 hours as I'm watching this great exodus off of social media and even some of the mainstream media that we thought was conservative. People moving over to Newsmax from Fox, people moving over to Parler from Twitter, people going over to WeMe from Facebook. People are still wanting to stay connected, but they don't want to be censored. They want to be able to pass information and still do their group things. And one of the most interesting things that I've witnessed over this last probably 3 days is the communication on private groups through Facebook, you know, where you can engage on stories and speculate and have this, you know, sense of that we're all private, we're all in this together, and what do you know, what do you hear, what do you see? Even that's being censored or blocked from inside the group and delayed and all of that. And so people are very frustrated right now. And there's some things brewing even here in Oregon. You know, we thought 20 years of mail-in ballot, we thought, you know, we've got this worked out, we've got a system. And then lo and behold, and this is in the paper, it's on the front page of the Statesman today, Statesman Journal, and it's on the bottom fold, and it says the Oregon elections director fired after he details problems. And apparently maybe he's having a little bit of a aha moment. You know, he's been involved here for a bit and he's having an aha moment. And apparently he's trying to say some things even before the election to say there's some trouble here and I don't trust, and we need to have a plan going forward. And the fact that he's being so honest has gotten him fired, which is very interesting. And so, you know, I've been asking the last few days, probably for about a week now since the results started coming in, where do we go from here? What do we do? And we know on a national level, certainly there's some things that are going on. But even this morning, as I opened up my Facebook page, because I haven't made that great transfer yet, I'm starting to get familiar with Parler and starting to get familiar with some of these other platforms. But as I'm making the great switch over, I'm still on Facebook, and there is a Facebook post from our friend Amy Ryan Courser, and she is telling us, and I'll just do the Stacy paraphrase, basically her race still isn't called. And she talked about how the media has blocked her, basically this whole campaign. She sent press releases, she's asked for their engagement and involvement, and they've just pretended like she doesn't even exist. Until the night of, right, and 15 minutes after 8 o'clock, they call the race for Kurt Schrader. And so, again, I circle back around, and here the media is almost like accessory, right? they're adding to reaffirm the incumbents and the Democrat Party, and they're almost like a communications leg of the Democrat Party. It feels like that, not only nationally, but locally. So what are we going to do about it? Where do we go from here? And that's kind of where I'm at today. And that's why I brought my new friend, Jeff, and I'm going to make sure I say this right, Kubler. Did I say that right? Jeff is here in the studio with me, and he's with the Oregon Faith and Freedom Foundation. Is that right?
Well, it's the Oregon Faith and Freedom PAC and Future Org. Foundation. We're
okay.
an arm of a national group called the Faith and Freedom Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
Many people might recall that in our history, when we've had Christians really engaged and effective, that happened most effectively under a group called the Christian Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, it was led by a guy named Dr. Ralph Reed.
Yes.
Well, Dr. Ralph Reed has come back into the picture, and he's established this group called the Faith and Freedom Coalition. And he's been active, and they probably got 20 to 30 state affiliates. We are one in a sense, in that we have the name and we are moving towards having a foundation. But right now we have a PAC.
A PAC, okay.
And, of course, one of the reasons you do a PAC in Oregon is because we have this rare thing called the Oregon Political Action Tax Credit.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate reality about this tax opportunity is that it's a rare thing. I think we're one of only one or two or three states that have something like this, where a person who pays state income taxes can take that as a credit against their state income taxes when they give a $50 donation to a PAC. So you got to do it here in Oregon because that's a great motivator for the small donor. And so the reality in that, and I'd like to revisit that as we talk, because this is a very hard thing for people to pick up on.
Yeah.
Because only 6% of our population uses it.
Incredible. And yet I think that there's other parts of the state that probably utilize it. Maybe the non-conservative, maybe they're utilizing it as well or not.
I don't believe
you
so.
Don't even so.
The liberals get all their money from the unions.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be a way that we could equalize the field if more people were to avail of themselves of this and realize, why would I give $50 or $100 per couple to the state to do things I don't agree with, like state-funded abortions, when I could take that money and give it to a PAC that was going to do something good to change Oregon? So there is a solution right there. If 94% of the conservatives were to realize, hey, I can give money to a PAC, and then we picked one with a good plan to change Oregon, we could do that. So the funding opportunity is there, but most people don't know.
Okay, so we need to look for a way to get the word out on that. So tell us a little bit, Jeff, about your background and how, here we're talking about where do we go from here. And you called me over the weekend. We had a great discussion about kind of this thing. Where do we go from here? What do we do? Irregardless of who actually is president, right? It depends on who we know that Trump has a good legal battle going on right now, but we need to here in Oregon get organized and we need to have a game plan. And it feels like it's a very scattered and splattered, which is what my Terry says for the weather. It's just kind of here and there and everywhere. Not really, doesn't feel like, as a newcomer coming back to Oregon, it's very coordinated or organized. And that's really what we need to do, is get connected, identify, and move forward with a plan, because we know the other side has a plan. And the other side, those that are against family values, we are wanting to stand strong for family values and see that they're upheld and that we can hold on to our Oregon that we love so very much. So talk to me a little bit, Jeff, about your background and how did you get here?
Well, I have an IT background. Mm-hmm. So at one point I left a business and started my own consulting business, which gave me freedom to do some things on the side. I was a county chairman in Benton County. I was a 5th district chair for a number of years. And as I was doing that, I had the freedom, because I was self-employed, to kind of step aside for a few weeks and experiment with how to get the vote out.
Mm-hmm.
So there were various times when I was a county chair where we established a call center and we had volunteers coming in. And we discovered from that effort that a good get out the vote effort could raise the vote count by 4 to 6%, and sometimes even more in a low turnout election like in the off years. What we discovered is that some people automatically vote and they feel and understand the importance of it. And there are others who don't, who are busy, they need the reminder. So that if you can put together a good effort of calling, of visiting their door and encouraging them to vote, that can change elections. And this is something we don't do very well as conservatives. We think, hey, we're all independent, all the individuals should go ahead and vote, but they often don't. So at one point, that led to me actually forming another business to do political offerings, which is called Action Solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you a few websites. So if you're interested in looking at Oregon Faith and Freedom, we have a website. It's OregonFaithandFreedom.org.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in looking at the national effort, that's called FFCoalition.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have this other business called ActionSolutions.net, which at one point, I discovered the value of an automated call, which is used to remind people. It's a good top-of-mind reminder. And as a chairman, one time I complained to another chairman that people weren't attending my meetings.
Mm-hmm.
that the phone tree would break down and that people didn't show up. So he gave me a single line automated calling device.
Oh.
And I discovered, wow, if I make 100, 150 calls, I can double the number of people who are at my event. And of course, that has repercussions because when people come to an event, they get energized, they hear the message of the speaker, suddenly they get engaged, they buy into it, and they start doing stuff.
Momentum.
And so that leads to more success because if you host an event and you put the effort together to bring people together, then if they come, now they hear the speaker, they get interested, they get educated. And, of course, this is one of the steps we need to take. Mm-hmm. We need to find a way to reach more people and engage them. And one of those ways is getting them to events. And so if you have a good effort in your event, maybe you're another, a county chairman someplace, you're trying to get people to events. So then you use email, use maybe mail. But that final thing that some people hate but others are encouraged by is that automated reminder.
Mm-hmm.
And so that led at one time to me actually doing all of the automated calls for the Carson for America campaign.
Okay.
So
well, that's incredible to get that background and that information. And I think most people don't mind the automated calls when they opt in and they say, I want that. And I think we get so busy with our days. It's a good reminder. You know, I know on social media, if I get a text to say, hey, don't forget, or, reminder, I don't feel annoyed by that. I'm like, oh, yes, that's right. It's on my calendar, but I had five other things I'm in the middle of. So it does come in handy. And, it is an interesting thing. In my background and working in politics in South Dakota and also a nonprofit, it seems like everybody's so protective of their list.
Mm-hmm.
That's like their golden egg that they're holding on to that they don't want to share. And I think, I don't know if that's the case in Oregon, but what sometimes is difficult for organizations moving forward is that collaborative effort. Let's share our data. Let's share information for the cause. But everybody has like this turf war over lists. Is that an issue here in Oregon?
I'm sure it is. And that leads to another thought of mine about the difference between how we run campaigns and how our opponents run campaigns. We operate in an area of what I call spray and pray marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of advertising and signs and various things, and we spray out a message and pray that people respond. One of the differences between us and what the liberals do is that they have a list, and they go get that list to vote. And if we ever... And when we do that kind of thing, when we create our own list, then we can win too, in spite of the hurdle of the vote by mail, which leads to many problems like we're seeing. And as it was rushed into implementation because of COVID, there are states where it was done very poorly, and there's lots and lots of cheating and graft. And then the whole issue of, is that really the will of the voter, or did somebody come by and unduly encourage them to make a vote?
Take a USB little device and put it in the computer and change it completely, overriding the will of the voters. We'll find out, hopefully, with this investigation nationally, what's going on. But we're focused here on Oregon today. We'll be back with more information after this. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Good morning to you. Thank you for tuning in to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. I'm Stacey Ann. Glad to be hanging out with you on this terrific Tuesday. It's 42 degrees right here at the KSLM studio. We're going to see weather, rain in the forecast continuing. Temperature only getting up to 51 degrees tomorrow. Partly sunny sky expected with 50 degrees as our overnight low will be 30s. And of course, it was fun to watch the video this morning of the newscasters up at Mount Hood and government camp and all the snow. And it was interesting. And for me, moving from South Dakota, I'm like, they can have it. I'm so glad to be. I'd do rain any day. That slippery black ice stuff is not so much fun. And they've already had some of that in South Dakota. And so I'm glad to be here in Oregon, hanging out with you all. And certainly we are continuing the conversation about where do we go from here? What do we do to make things different here in Oregon? And I'm glad to have Jeff in the studio with me, and we are coming up with a plan, Jeff. We're kind of working through these details, and you started before the break to talk a little bit. We were talking about lists and doing things collaboratively, and one of the things I've thought about is we've got all of these people who signed this petition for Governor Brown and the recall. I mean, 2,800 or 2,700 folks. That's a large amount of people that said, you know, we want to see something different at the top level here in our state. Now, if they're conservative, Republican, Democrat, you know, that's to be worked out. But certainly they don't like what's happening with Governor Brown. And to me, I would think that this list would be a golden egg in a sense.
I totally agree. Lists are our solution. And if we look back in history and when Oregon has had some amazing wins, it was all based upon lists. For instance, Dennis Richardson, 2016, mm-hmm. One of the things that I understand he had majored on was creating a list. And he had this very large list of people who want to be part of his email list. So mm-hmm. There was a list that helped him win. If you go back even further to 2010, that was an effort where the two legislative caucuses worked with Action Solutions to actually create an effort where we had paid live callers, and mm-hmm. we had a bunch of automated surveys and live messages. We actually had a call center in Albany, Oregon, where we focused on about a third of the races in the state.
Mm-hmm.
We bought really high-quality lists, which led us to connect more with people mm-hmm. who were actually people we intended to get to. And from that effort, we did about 1 million various automated messages or surveys. We did about 375,000 live calls, and we ended up with a list of about 50,000 ID'd unaffiliated voters.
Mm-hmm.
And that turned into six surprising wins in that year and left us with a tied House and left us 300 votes away from tying the Senate
mm-hmm.
in another race. And that was a kind of an era of good feeling when both sides had to share in leadership. And that was kind of the high point of outside of Dennis Richardson's victory in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I never understood why we didn't build more on that, but we didn't, and we went back to our old methods. So these old methods have left us in a state that I believe is fully winnable.
Right.
We are a purple state. If you look at the registration, there's 25% Republican, 35% Democrat, and 40% unaffiliated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that unaffiliated area that we could win.
Yes.
Now, the Democrats, they discussed opening their primary to unaffiliated voters back last year. Now there's 1 million unaffiliated voters. And the Democrats debated this in one of their statewide meetings, and they came away saying, no, we can't do that. We can't do that because there's 319,200 conservatives in that group.
Whoa.
And of course, my immediate thought is, why would you say 319,200? I don't remember. I think it was a, mm-hmm. kind of a distinct number.
Real
like specific.
That. Specific.
Specific number. It wasn't, there's at least 300,000 or there's at least 30%. It was kind of a specific number. And of course, my thought was, oh, they have a list.
Mm.
Now, back to your point, these recall lists, I think, are really important. Now, the frustrating part about that was, I think the idea of a recall was great. And I think it probably would have recalled the governor, because I think people are really unhappy that mm-hmm. their kids aren't going to school.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an overwhelming willingness to send your kids to school. There's all kinds of reaction and an objection to our state taking away our religious liberties mm-hmm. and limiting our churches while we watch a nightly gathering of people in Portland to burn Portland
exactly.
down.
Exactly.
And nobody ever says, oh, so-and-so went to a Antifa riot
and got
COVID and took it home to their grandparents, and we got to stop that.
Right.
So while that's happening, we don't have our religious liberties. We have been, you know, in one sense, we are here because people fled oppression to have religious liberty, and now we so quickly just vacate it and let
yes.
the governor take away what I understand she could have done for 28 days.
Mm.
Now she's extended to hundreds of days, and
yes.
of course her fully appointed judiciary backs her up,
mm-hmm.
and we are left at a situation where we are counted as less faithful citizens than a person who goes down and burns Portland down.
Yeah, which is a conflict and certainly disturbing for the future of Oregon. And just in the headlines overnight that there was a woman who was arrested in Walmart. She had a medical reason not to wear her mask, had a doctor's note, and was arrested. They called the police on her right here in Oregon because of the new reaffirmed mandates from Governor Brown, which technically just started like on election day, right? And they upgraded on what a mask is and all of that. And now on Wednesday, we're going to go on pause. Several counties, I think it's up to maybe 9 counties now, are going to be restricted and a lot of businesses impacted again. So we need to come up with, where do we go from here? What do we do about this? And I think the answer is we got to get together. We got to identify one another and figure out whose team we're playing on and move together, because the power is still with the people. I believe we still have the power. We just don't know about it. It's that silent majority. You know, we need to come together. We need to stand firm and move together in a way that is effective and strategic. And again, I talked about this yesterday, that, you know, we can be effective and really strategic and do it in a way of kindness and bold and brave. You don't have to be like the other side, destroying things and tearing things down. We can be almost stealth, you know, in our effectiveness. Are we willing? What are we willing to do? And we're going to continue the conversation after this break. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Our phone lines, 503-589-1220. We're coming up with a plan, a game plan today, talking about where do we go from here. Are you willing to join us? I think you are. We'll be back after this. Glad to have you along. I'm Stacey Ann. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, and we're having a grand time today talking about all of these issues that are affecting us. Where do we go from here? And we're talking about some of the things that are maybe obstacles right now to being effective here in Oregon. And I think, and I've watched this before, you know, we have all of these splintered out organizations that have their memberships and those people that follow them. And they're little units across Oregon. And I saw this in South Dakota. And we need to all come together and we need to find a way that we can all agree on some key issues moving forward. And one of the things that happened in South Dakota that was very effective on some health issues and that I got to be a part of in regards to Tobacco-Free Kids Network, and we got the indoor air cleaned out by having smoking going outside. And what happened was, is we got an alliance of several of these organizations coming together around one key issue or two key issues. And we gathered all of our information, all our data, and all our lists together. And each of those organizations were involved with their own people getting redistributing the information to be effective, and kind of the action team and the go team. And I really see that that's something here that needs to happen in Oregon to move forward, not only to get out the vote, but let's back up. And I always do this, Jeff. I have Jeff here in the studio with me, and we're talking about how to be effective. Where do we go from here? And here's the thing, Jeff. I find I always go with, let's start with the end in mind. And the Oregon that we look for isn't necessarily, we don't necessarily want an all red Oregon. I mean, it would be great if everything went our way all the time. But you and I know that there is that conflict. There's some good things that come out of that debate, right? And that discussion, I believe. And maybe I'm Pollyanna, maybe we do want it all red, you know. But I think that there is some healthy discussion that happens when you have people who come from different perspectives. But what's happened is that discussion has been closed down and been all Democrat, and they have a supermajority and they control everything, every part of our lives here in Oregon. Even though you said our state is purple, and you look at the map and it's the metro areas deciding the whole what's going on for the rest of the state, and we have to just live with it, right? So where do we go from here? What do you think?
Well, I want to go back and talk more about that list before we're talking, but let me just give a couple of points of connection for people. Mm-hmm. OregonFaithAndFreedom.org. You can go to our website. You can join our email list. We've had an active email list going for the entire year, a little bit more than that. The national group is FFCoalition.com. There is a yearly meeting that is held. It has been in Washington, D.C., but the last one was in Atlanta, and it's called The Road to Majority.
Mm.
And going to your discussion about the various groups, when I looked at Oregon, I realized we could use a more efficient, effective group. So I looked at a number of different groups, and I ended up aligning with the Faith and Freedom Coalition because of the effective leadership, the mm-hmm. proven effective leadership mm-hmm. of Dr. Ralph Reed. So if people want to align with our group and get involved, we do have a number of groups in our state that have had some effectiveness, but mm-hmm. it's also apparent to me that we aren't winning with that equation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I'm focused on is finding equations that win. And so you talked earlier about the unaffiliated voter, and mm-hmm. that person is an enigma.
Yes.
From a standpoint of getting out the vote, you talked about the fact that during this lockdown, we were all at home and we could have been calling people mm-hmm. and we could have been inviting them to vote, but we don't have enough with 25% of the population to win in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So the actual solution is finding those unaffiliated voters and the hot button issues that will encourage them to vote for our voters. And this is what happened, as I spoke of earlier, when mm-hmm. we did those ID calls. We were looking for unaffiliated voters who would align with us. And we spoke of the fact that there's at least 319,200 the Democrats have identified.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of any Republican or conservative effort that has ever ID'd unaffiliated voters outside of this 2010 issue and outside of things I'd be willing to do as part of what our group is doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe that we need an effort that's going to educate people, going to encourage Christians to be involved, because to me, what we have going on here is a clash of worldviews.
Yes.
In the past, 40, 50 years ago, I believe we were all operating from the Judeo-Christian worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And we had different permutations of how that manifested itself and what people wanted to do. But now we have a worldview clash, and this is the issue that I find with a lot of people who they should be thinking from a Judeo-Christian worldview, but they get so involved in the world that they have maybe on the political side, they think from a secular humanist worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the clash we have, in my view, going on in our culture right now.
Yes.
Donald Trump, by an amazing turn of events, turns out to be a man of strong Judeo-Christian values, even though his life
mm-hmm.
did not reflect that. When he became president, he surrounded himself with people like Mike Pence
mm-hmm.
and with Dr. Carson.
Mm-hmm.
And one time I had a conversation with somebody in the Carson campaign who said, you know, since Trump has become the nominee, he and Dr. Carson have been talking on the phone sometimes 7 to 8 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at what he's done, and you can actually go to the ffcoalition.com and see that there's a tab you can look at that's the amazing record of the things he's done, things that other presidents that are in our worldview talked about doing, like moving, you know, our ambassador's office to Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
you know, standing for Judeo-Christian values. You look at the things that the president has done when that pastor who was accused of proselytizing in Turkey was sitting in prison under the Obama administration, but as soon as Trump came in, he was out.
Right.
And you look at the amazing things that he has done. I don't understand how he became who he has been, and I'm hoping and praying he continues that, because I think that he did win, and the Democrats have, you know, used a lot of issues. Like, I posit this question: if you are counting ballots and you are excluding Republicans from being part of that observation, which literally every county in our nation has, you know, when they have somebody counting ballots, they have a Democrat and a Republican mm-hmm. observing, and those people have to agree if there's a ballot that's in question. What are you doing when you're excluding Republicans? This I know to be a fact. I have a friend who's working the issue in Las Vegas. Republicans have been excluded from observing. When you're not letting people observe, you are cheating.
That's right.
There's only one reason you're doing that.
Yep.
You want to count ballots that should not and would not have been counted if you had had proper observers. And this is happening in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, in various places.
Georgia, I believe.
Georgia,
as well, Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Where people are not being allowed to observe, and they're doing that because they're cooking the books on the national election.
And on a national level, you haven't really heard the national Democrats, Kamala or Biden, talk about, even recognize the fact that there's some illegal behavior. They're not mm-hmm. even identifying or talking about that, like they want to make sure it's sorted and get to the bottom of it or whatever. Obviously, they're just moving on ahead, that this is who we are, and we're going to be the next elect. And it's interesting that even the government, the GAS, I think it's the, I don't know what the title is, but they're saying, look, they're wanting to set up their offices as and assume mm-hmm. that transition team and all of this, and that the governmental office is like, look, in the Constitution, it says you need to be certified before we start setting you up. You have your pre-election, you know, responsibilities and resources, but we're not moving to that next level. And so there's not been a certified candidate, and yet the media is calling it out, right?
And the reason they're doing that mm-hmm. is because they're warning our judiciary. You
yes.
better not mess with the results, otherwise there'll be terrible riots, because mm-hmm. we've already had our people celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the first threat was all these riots will continue as long as Donald Trump is president. You better not vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we think we can make a statement that we won based upon this flawed election, we're going to warn our judiciary not to interfere, because it'll cause too much violence if they were to say, oh, all those ballots that were excluded and kept aside in Pennsylvania, those aren't, and they came after the election day.
Mm-hmm.
They can't be voted. They can't be counted. He wins Pennsylvania, something in Arizona. Suddenly, oh, we don't have a winner, and Donald Trump is the winner. Then the Antifa and the BLM will be out rioting and wrecking mm-hmm. our country. And that's in my view, why the national media let Joe Biden interrupt national football, which
crazy.
Americans have been thirsting for this college football.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a college football game.
Mm-hmm.
And now in the middle of it, they interrupt to let him proclaim himself as president, simply to warn our judiciary, you better not mess with this, because it's done. It's a done deal.
Well, and the will of the people is to be recognized, their vote. Again, the power belongs to the people. And are we going to just turn over? Are we going to stand with our president and fight? And I think that's where we're at on a national level. And what are we going to do here in Oregon? We have I believe it was the state director of elections has come out and said our systems here are old. They're susceptible. He started talking about it even before the election. And guess what? He's fired. So I think even here at home in Oregon, we have the media assisting the Democrat Party by locking out viable elected Republican candidates that should have had an opportunity to have debate, have the same kind of equal media attention that certainly the incumbents had. And the difficulty has been, and we talked about this a little bit, and I want to get to it after this break, is that this was a different election with COVID. And when you back up and look at a helicopter view, you can kind of see maybe some strategy from the other side and how this all fits together like a big puzzle. We'll continue the conversation after this. And I know we've got people waiting on the phone lines, 503-589-1220. We'll open up the lines after this. Hey, yeah. Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Hello, I'm Stacey Ann. So glad to be hanging out with you on this wonderful Tuesday. Oh, it's already been 1 week from the election, and we still don't really know where it's all going to settle yet. And I don't know, it has been like a roller coaster for me over this last week. And I have to remind myself that I can't let my emotions control me. I've got to stay focused on the facts and realize what it is that we need to do and kind of where do we go from here. And as a person of faith and certainly in prayer, there is all kinds of rallying going on right now. I'm getting messages from national groups, from local groups about calling to prayer, coming together for prayer. And I know I've got Jeff in the studio with the Oregon Faith and Freedom Organization, and we're certainly talking about prayer and what we can do. And let's talk a little bit about the prayer effort that's going on. We have every day there's time together to pray. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm familiar with a number of people who are calling for prayer. I asked you to record something to help us. I think maybe in the recording you were encouraging people to join in prayer. And one group I'm familiar with is asking people every day at, I think, 5 p.m. To join in praying that truth would prevail, because we have our sacred vote, and we don't want that stolen in any way by someone who is cheating. So when somebody is allowed to vote that is not a valid voter, or they're voting multiple times, which can happen under vote by mail. With vote by mail, the unfortunate truth is we are all removed one step from that authorized vote that we used to have, when we had to go in and present
and
ourselves
our ID,
and say, yes, my name is so-and-so, and I'm that 95-year-old person. Well, wait a minute, you don't look 95 to me. When you are at home and you can collect ballots, you know, used to be you were limited by time and space. If you were gutsy enough to try and steal a vote, you know, by going into the polling center and signing illegally, you had to be pretty bold to do that.
Right.
Now with vote by mail, you can get away with that more likely. Now they have people who do supposedly verify your signature, but they're not trained people. They're just, you know, people who are hired to look at your old signature and compare it to the new. You have a situation going on where somebody could decide that's not your signature, and then they could reach out to you and try to get you to come in and tell that you truly did vote. And what if you don't get the information? What if you don't respond, and then your vote doesn't count?
Right.
So with an election day, we know you came in and you voted, you signed, you stood before people and you said, that's me, and you voted. And now we have an election several weeks period. And, and it, now it turns out we got an election several week period before the election, several week afterwards, because in Pennsylvania, they let people actually return their ballots after the election, and that's
a crazy big issue to me. And having voted both in Arkansas and in South Dakota in person, showing my ID, it's so strange here. Even how to campaign. We talked about this a little bit earlier about how this whole campaigning has been upended by this strategy, I believe. All the COVID and the COVID lockdown, and the businesses shut down. Businesses that would typically, a lot of independent businesses, entrepreneurs, they're not franchisees. They're local risk takers, in a sense. They're the ones that would support local candidates. They're the ones that would help rally behind or throw a, you know, a backyard barbecue or whatever, or do fundraising with their friends. And all of them were affected by this COVID lockdown and the lack of business. And so a lot of the support financially that these local candidates and statewide candidates would get was definitely affected. And let alone not being able to go door to door, not being able to go to the county fairs, not being able to go to the state fair, all of those things that we have hinged our campaign strategy in the past on was upended this time.
Yeah, I want to go back and mention again how people can connect with Oregon Faith and Freedom, Oregon Faith and Freedom, all spelled out, .org. The national group is ffcoalition.com. So everyone hopefully will go look at those websites and connect the dots with us, join our email group, our email list group, so we can reach out to you and understand how you want to be involved. Because my thinking is that what Oregon needs is we need, as a foundation, we need a 36 county chapter group.
Yes.
And that's what I would love to find, people who wanted to stand up a chapter group. Because again, I go back to 2010, and in that year we did all this paid effort to reach people via phone. And mm-hmm. this is one of the differences between what our side does and what the other side does. So the other side has this paid or pseudo-paid group called the unions to get out and fill their seats in call centers and make those calls.
Mm-hmm.
We unfortunately rely upon a volunteer effort. And, you know, if we were all doing the same thing, that would work, but we're not.
Right.
They can be sure that they get these outbound calls done because people are coming in to do it. They're either there because they know, hey, we'd better do this to keep our jobs, or we're getting paid. When we get to a point where a candidate says, yeah, I can raise $1 million or $2 or $3 million and I can give a significant portion of that to some get out the vote ground game, we'll win also.
Yes.
Because that's what we did back in 2010. But in 2010, there was also a group called AFP, Americans for Prosperity, that was kind of the stepping stone for a person who gets interested in changing our culture and can join a group and get educated. And then they can realize, okay, from that point, how else can I get involved? Now I can move from that step to being a precinct committee person for the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about these lists of signers to the recall effort. I did find out that, you know, there were actually three lists that were created as this was moving. First, there was a guy who ran for Attorney General, Michael Cross, has a list.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing I'm aware of has been done with that, except he does have some email outreach from that group.
Mm-hmm.
Then there were two lists by the Republican Party. One of them was in the 100,000 range.
Wow.
And one was nearly 300,000. And this is what I thought would be an excellent get-out-the-vote list
mm-hmm.
for different efforts. But the reality was maybe we didn't have a clear understanding of how we could use that list. I think that the governor might have been recalled, but maybe she wouldn't have been, and it may not have been such a good idea to actually file it. But the list was brilliant in my mind. So what I discovered is this first list had been worked and had been matched to the voter file, and you could get this list out of the tool that the GOP uses.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually pulled that list, and there were 105,000 people there matched to the voter file. What I discovered was about 30% of that list were 0, 1, and 2 voters. And these are low incident voters. If you're a good voter in Oregon, you have a 4 of 4 rating.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a 0, you don't vote.
So in a sense, there are lists, in a sense, it's kind of like mining. It's a little bit of, you know, like finding treasure in a sense,
mm-hmm.
and it's out there. And we really want to encourage you, friends. We're going to be wrapping up this hour, and we're going to go into the next hour. And I know there are folks that want to join the conversation. We'll encourage you to call in next hour, 503-589-1220. We want your involvement. Are you willing and ready to step up and be a part of an alliance, of an organization, faith and freedom organization, where we can go forward together with a strategy to stay informed, engaged, and certainly move Oregon in a place that lines up with family values? We'll be back at the top of the hour. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Remember, over, under, around, or through, no matter what you're facing today, you and I, we're overcomers. We'll be back after this.
morning, and thanks for tuning in KSLM this fine day here on 104.3 FM and 1220 AM as we now present Good Morning Salem with Stacy Ann.
Good morning to you. So glad to be with you on this Tuesday, November 10th. It's 8:06 in the morning, and I'm Stacy Ann, Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, 42 degrees, and it's only going to warm up to 51. We're going to see some of that rain and clouds around the community, and I'm telling you, it is fall. It truly is, and I think I'm kind of getting used to the change of the time. I found myself up even earlier and earlier. You know, it's like, why am I getting up so early? It's like, oh yeah, about a week ago we had that time change, and so I feel little good, rested and productive because I'm getting things done. I don't know about you. Maybe you're enjoying a restful morning as well. I am excited to share with you. You know, tomorrow is our Veterans Day. And we are working on putting together a program talking and honoring our veterans and talking about what ways that we can be supportive. And we know throughout the Pacific Northwest, when COVID hit, many of our veteran homes were hit and many patients were affected, and as well as our senior care facilities around the Pacific Northwest. And I think finding ways that we can encourage veterans, those that maybe are unable to get out and about as much, writing them a note, letting them know, thank you. There's several restaurants and communities reaching out tomorrow. And tomorrow, unfortunately, is the pause and the further lockdown of our communities due to COVID numbers increasing, according to OHA. And so certainly we want to keep that in mind, but look for ways in your own life. If you have someone in your family that has served, you know of someone, maybe a coworker, look for ways to show kindness and gratitude for their time that they have spent. And there is a special program with the Capital City Republican Women. They're doing a special program to honor our veterans on Thursday, November 12th. It's a membership dinner. And again, another way to get involved is I really want to encourage you, if you've not really been involved in any of the Republican, Marion County Republican or Polk County, Lynn County, Lincoln County, and go on and on. But the place to start is to get engaged in with the Republican Party. And certainly last hour, we've been having a conversation with Jeff with the Oregon Faith and Freedom organization here in Oregon, where we can start getting engaged in these coalitions of folks that can move our state in the direction that it needs to go, supporting family values. And thank you, Jeff, for being a part of the morning show. We're in hour two now, and we have much to cover. And I know we had some folks kind of hanging out on the phone lines waiting to talk to us, and we just had a lot of content that we wanted to get through. And last hour, we kind of laid the foundation of kind of the state of the state and where we are, where we need to go. We talked about the potential for fraud here in Oregon because of our old systems that we have. And you and I certainly know that there was trouble with our unemployment computer system. And I've heard of trouble, and I think they've been working on it with the DMV computer systems. And now, just last week, the election director said, whoa, from the Secretary of State's office, said there's some issues here. And whoever gets elected, whether it be Kim Thatcher or Shamia, we need to have a plan. And he is no longer the director. He's been since fired. And this is a problem in Oregon, having older systems, isn't it?
Definitely is. The server 2008 R2 left support, I believe, last January. Mm-hmm. So it's used in some of their applications, and that makes it subject to hacking. And the unfortunate reality is you have evil people out there who hack all the time, and it's a terrible thing when you get hacked. You have your system suddenly frozen, and you can't use it, and you got to go reconstruct it and hopefully have backups and so forth. And so our state sits at a place where, because they haven't invested money in some of these things, and that's been under 30 years of Democrat control, that has taken place, because they have had other priorities for the monies that we are taxed with. And of course, you have the whole mismanagement of the PERS money, and just a bunch of bad, bad things that have happened. And hopefully Oregonians will wake up. And one of the ways we can help people wake up is we can help look for those allies in the Enigma class called the unaffiliated voter and get them the information they need to vote properly, because they don't often get a message because they are a mystery to both sides.
Well, and part of that is, I know for years, there were several years, I think even when I moved to Arkansas, I was at that time coming from South Dakota, and independent was more or less the non-affiliated, but independence here is actually a party. I didn't want to be labeled anything. I wanted to be able to kind of be under the radar and still strategic and still support family values and things. And I was out of the loop for some years after being very involved in Republican, getting awards and all of that when I was younger. I just kind of got burnt a little bit, which happens in churches. It happens in other organizations. Life happens, personalities happen. And that's part of my growth experience and understanding. And I realized that, you know, as in that middle ground, I couldn't participate in primaries. I couldn't really be effective in change. And I pulled out the Democrat and the Republican Party platform, and I looked at what they stood for, and I said, whoa, this stands for life. This stands for, you know, liberty, supporting the Constitution, the Founding Fathers. I'm going to go with the Republican Party, right? And so a lot of those unaffiliated, I believe, I can kind of relate to them, because they're like, I don't like the negative, the fighting. And we saw some of the media at the end there coming out of Portland, you know, and $5,000 for a 30-second ad, give me a break. You know, the media is making tons of money. And yet, how do you influence voters if you can't get on the air there, you know, because they're certainly not going to give it to you, and they're not going to call forth good debate or any of those things. I think the media needs to be called an account. And I did a prediction on Facebook before the day of the election. I said, I have a prediction, election prediction, that the media is going to lose. And we're seeing that every single day, aren't we? The people are pulling away and going, I don't like how they're controlling the message here.
I don't either. And I find that our media, instead of being a truth-finding media, they're really just an arm of the Democrat liberal, secular humanist worldview. And they, you know, one of the reasons that they really react against Trump is because he's strongly standing up for Judeo-Christian worldview points of view and doing a very efficient job of that. And they can't understand that. And I think when you understand a person's worldview, it helps you understand where they're coming from.
Exactly.
But you also have to realize that oftentimes when you hear somebody's worldview, you think they're crazy because they're so far out of your worldview. And, you know, I think that going back to how you went through this process of understanding who you are and what party you should be aligned with, that's something that people have to do when they vote. They have to think, who is the closest person to support my worldview?
Right.
And what is my worldview? If I have a Judeo-Christian worldview, there's no way I could ever vote for a Joe Biden because he believes in abortion on demand throughout 9 months of pregnancy. And to me, the Republican Party, first of all, where would our country be if those folks who met in like 1852 in that Wisconsin city had decided not to create the Republican Party?
Wow.
What would have happened? I mean, the Republican Party is responsible for freeing the slaves. I look back in history under the term Civil War in Wikipedia to see where there was another example of a group of people saying to another group of people, stop treating and mistreating those people that you have in your establishment of slavery, or we're going to fight you to end it. And I can't find one. I mean, there have been civil wars over one son wanting to be the king when another son, you know, various things like that. But where is there another example of people in righteous indignation standing up and saying, stop your mistreatment of this people group? In fact, I happened to watch a recent movie about, you know, the people who, the abolitionists who helped people get out of slavery. And you realize that in 1850, they the Democrats forced a bill through called the Fugitive Slavery Law, where now people from the South could go seek their slaves in the North.
Mm.
And now the people who were being freed from slavery had to actually go to Canada to escape completely because
wow.
they could be sought out in the North. Well, in my view, the Republican Party is still the same party it was then. It stood for freedom. It wanted to end slavery. What is abortion on demand if not another form of slavery, where you're saying, hey, in the first case of slavery, you were saying, I want to use your economic value to make myself rich.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're saying, I want to get rid of you because you're going to get in the way of my economic production and I will have to support you. And so the Republican Party, you look back in history of all the things that they've done, and the conservative movement, in my estimation, led to the freeing of the slaves,
mm-hmm.
women's right to vote, so many things. If that party had never been formed, where would we be today?
Well, and we've been negligent, I think, the Republican Party in going ahead and educating people and letting people know that this is who we are, this is our identity, this is what we're fighting for. I think we've gotten so away from that, in a sense that, yes, we talk about abortion and how bad it is and that we need to not have abortion and all of those things, but the foundation, we have been the same all the way along, and what the trouble is the way the Democrats and the liberals are trying to remake history and make mm-hmm. it seem like the Republicans were the rich farm owners that were enslaving, you know, and they're trying to rewrite history, and they're making the corporations and the business owners and all the folks that want to take the risk to employ people and create greater opportunity in the community, somehow they're the bad guy because of capitalism. And they're trying to rewrite history and rewrite the story. And so these new guys and gals that are in college and relearning this history, they're all of a sudden, quote unquote, woke. And instead of having that moral background of Judeo-Christian values, they have the moral value of social justice.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow suddenly they're gonna come back and clean the slate or right the wrongs from 200 years ago. And they're off base.
Yes.
They're off base.
Can I give everybody another to-do?
Yes.
Every year before the end of the year, if you haven't already done it, you should give a political action tax credit. Now,
yes.
I'm going to direct you, encourage you to go to OregonFaithAndFreedom.org and do that. Now, I hope you've done it already for the election, but if you haven't, which we know that probably out of every 100 people, 94 of them haven't, you should go and give a PAC donation so that you can credit that. Now, credit mm-hmm. is different than a deduction. A deduction reduces your taxable income and reduces what you pay to the federal government. This is state income tax, has nothing to do with federal, and you can give money to a PAC in Oregon that will be a credit against your income taxes and reduce it a dollar for dollar reduction up to that limit of
$50. Up to $50 per individual, $100 for a couple.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Oregon Faith and Freedom PAC, and you can go to OregonFaithAndFreedom.org, right?
Right.
Awesome. We're going to continue the conversation after this. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, continuing to talk about where do we go from here. We'll be back. KSLM, Reliable News Talk Radio. Hello, I'm Stacey Ann. Glad to have you along with us today. Are you tired of hearing about elections being stolen? Certainly, we know that this is happening in the presidential race, and there's been, last Saturday, there were rallies at every capital in the United States, and I had an opportunity to attend the rally here in Salem, and it was very good. And there were people from all over the state that came in from the southern part of Oregon, over from the mountains, over in the Bend area, certainly from the metro area in Portland. It was really great. And I think it's important that we get together and join together in moving forward. And the Oregon Faith and Freedom Organization certainly is a way to do so. And we want to really encourage you to get involved. Get active. Do something positive where you can get engaged, learn the facts. And I think the plan is, Jeff, is to help people be able to dialogue, right? To identify talking points, to train people how to talk to people about these issues. Because I think so many of us have been afraid, where they call us the silent majority in a sense. We don't want conflict. We don't know how to engage the issues. And the other side is hearing it constantly from the media, just the talking points and stuff. And it's hard to know how to come against those. And usually what happens, within two or three sentences, you can get that other person, if you have the right kind of information, and go, oh, I never thought of that. You know, and a lot of times it's just they're coming at you with information. You start asking them questions. It kind of, in that dialogue, if you're done in the right spirit, you can get them to start thinking outside the box, for the most part. That's been my experience.
I agree with that. And I think that, you know, one of the good things, I mean, if a person's listening to your talk radio this morning, mm-hmm. they are on a good step, because there's lots of content in talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
And you will notice that talk radio doesn't really work for liberals. The only way they have talk radio succeed is if the government funds it. But, you know, conservatives love to talk and mm-hmm. listen and think.
Mm-hmm.
And so talk radio, Rush Limbaugh, your program, mm-hmm. others are good. There's a great newspaper called the Epoch Times.
Excellent.
That's a conservative
one. I just found
it.
Yes.
There's lots of websites like Oregon Faith and Freedom and mm-hmm. FF Coalition that have resources mm-hmm. to help you think. For instance, the whole discussion about whether I should vote for this man, Donald Trump, who in his past has had so many things mm-hmm. that he shouldn't have been doing.
Right.
But now is a man who's proved himself to be a Judeo-Christian worldview. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there are still Christians who couldn't vote for him because of that past.
Sure.
That would be kind of like thinking, well, I can never believe in Paul because he persecuted Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, so people do change. And we don't know if what has happened in Donald Trump's life. He's never, disclosed it. But, in my conversations with people, for instance, who were close to the Carson campaign, mm-hmm. they seem to indicate that maybe something was happening.
And I've had on a personal account someone who knows the family, raised with the mm-hmm. family, knows him and knows that he has had an encounter mm-hmm. and a faith decision in his life. And my question to you that may be listening, or you have a family member that is listening, and you get into this conversation and that I'm just not going to vote. There was no two lesser of two evils mm-hmm. in this case. So they just sat out this election, right? My question to you is, if you're a born-again believer in Jesus Christ, that whole message of redemption is that you repent and you move in a new direction. You look at your past and you say, I'm sorry, Lord, forgive me. I accept you and I want to live a different life. And that's a conversion, you know, born again is oftentimes. And so we're talking about that as Christians. We're talking about that and we're wanting to share the good news, the gospel. And yet we're holding our president who's had this experience and it's been testified to me from mm-hmm. someone who knows him. We're holding him to the standard of his old life, just like you said, the Saul-Paul conversion,
right?
You know, and I'm sure Paul had some splaining to do, right? And here's the other thing. When, in my faith worldview, when the Lord catches a fish, right, he doesn't ask the fish to be clean before he catches them. We don't have to clean our lives up to mm-hmm. come to Christ. He accepts us. In the Bible that I read, and when I read the red letters in the Bible of Jesus' life, he would go to those people who were down and out, who were the tax collectors, who were the most vile in a community, and he would show them redemption. Mm-hmm. He would heal them. They didn't earn it. they didn't have, you know, and it's like we have these layers in our community of what's accepted behavior, you know, and we're the Sunday school chart, you know, putting the stickers. And if you have so many stickers on your Sunday school chart, you're like above everybody else. We got to get rid of all of that. And we got to live life out loud of love and light and truth and give forgiveness and start fresh. And so that's my frustrating part about all of that is these believers that sit out because of Donald's behavior from 30 years ago or 25 years ago, you know, that is not the same man. And I would hope in my life, I'm not the same woman that I was 30 years ago, you know?
Amen.
And so that's a part of the Christian experience and part of the human experience is we're continuing to grow and we're continuing to learn and we're trying to refine and get better. And what I see in President Trump is someone who isn't owned by either party. And we got to remember when he got elected, he made both sides mad. Mm-hmm. He upended both sides. And there were people this time who said, I didn't vote for him last time, but I'm voting this time, which again makes me put into question these elections and the fraud.
I would agree with that. I think you have to go back to understanding your worldview and finding the candidate who most closely supports that.
Exactly.
And realizing that by sitting out, you say nothing. You make no message.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that, you know, some studies say that 30 or 40% of the evangelical pro-life community are not registered, are not voting. In our state, we discovered the Slavic Christian folks who were agitated by the attack on their family parental rights, by the vaccine bills that were put forward, which I'm sure are going to come back in a large way.
Oh, in a big way.
And it'll be hard. You'll be hard put to say, I don't want to get a vaccine because of this COVID. And then you continue and you realize that that community could be 200,000 voters.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working in a legislative office and some of them came by and signed up for our newsletter. When I looked them up to see if they were registered to vote, they were either not registered to vote, they were unaffiliated voters, often with no voter history, so meaning they probably were DMV voters. And they never voted. So
we have opportunities.
Equations that could lead to victory.
So we're going to all come together and join Oregon Faith and Freedom Organization and work towards redeeming some of the land that we've lost, right, in a sense. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, having a wonderful conversation this morning. You're welcome to join at 503-589-1220. We'll be back after this. Good morning to you. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Hello, I'm Stacey Ann, hanging out this morning with Jeff, with the Oregon Faith and Freedom Organization. And we're talking about strategy and where do we go from here? And we know that the national election is still kind of shaken out and there's some great momentum as far as the court cases. And we're hearing, you know, some of the news organizations are backing up from their declaring Biden as the president-elect. And they're kind of tiptoeing around that. And if you look at different maps, some now have him down and not under that 270 mark. It's very interesting how the national media is playing this out. And certainly here locally in Oregon, there's some things that are coming to light in regards to our own state election director has been fired here in Oregon because he made some statements prior to the election about our outdated computer systems that now we know are susceptible to hackers. And so all of these elements come into play. And it's all this information. And of course, you know, here at KSLM News Talk Radio, and certainly on my show, it's good to call out the darkness and talk about it and point it out, but I'm really big about being a part of the solution. What are we going to do about it? And it's time, friends, that, and if you're listening this morning, I know I'm singing to the choir, right? Because preaching to the choir because you're involved, you're listening to talk radio, you're engaged. Many of you are downloading the podcast or sending links out to your friends and family to keep them informed. And certainly with this mass exodus from Facebook and Twitter and moving to new platforms, people are kind of trying to stay in the communication loop. One thing hasn't changed. In fact, what's growing in popularity by our data and our statistics since we got our brand new website up and moving, KSLM.news. A lot of people are going to our podcast and listening and letting people know. And we're looking at more ways to get that information out to you on a regular basis. But one thing that still remains very effective, I find, and Jeff, you can fill in the information here, is I think email blasts and email lists still are effective. I know they're not as trendy because it's not instant, but I like email because you can go to it when you can go to it and then leave. You know, it's not like coming on your phone, and if you don't respond right now, you're not on it, you know. And sometimes you're in the middle of things. You can't respond to a text message or a blast right on your phone. You have to do the action later because you're in the middle of something else and it's a distraction. I like email because you can go back, you can save it, you could reread it. There's the details. Now, the downside is that you get so much email that it's hard to weed through all of it at once. But if you have an email, if you sign on to things like action committee, things like this, where it's do something, it's very effective. And so to get involved with Oregon Faith and Freedom, you just go to the website, right?
Right. Go to the website, sign up. Go to the national website, ffcoalition.com, sign up, oregonfaithandfreedom.org. I think what I want to stress is that Oregon is a purple state, mm-hmm. and the problem has been we have not upped our game to match the opponents. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, we can win. If we had a program that was not just the spray and pray marketing that we typically do, which is based upon a lot of signs and TV advertising and various things, and we actually went to a point where we came to the place where we, via various methods, could say, we've identified a similar list to what the Democrats have done, which we know somehow they've identified 319,200 conservatives among the 1 million. Now, I, in my political business, I do surveys and polling. And one thing I've discovered is that when you ask people what their party is, and you mm-hmm. leave them the option for a third party or a minor party, and then you ask them, if you had to choose between the two parties, which would you choose? Well, what I've discovered is of the unaffiliated who will respond, over 60% will say, if I had to choose, I'd be Republican. So my observation is that there are more disaffected people who won't align with a party that come from the Republican Party and end up in that unaffiliated bucket. Mm-hmm. So if we can find a way to identify a hot button issue, and this is what happened in that 2010 election, is we did a Get Out the Vote program with mm-hmm. a message to the Republicans about their Republican candidate to get out and vote and support that person. And we added into that the unaffiliated person who had given us a hot button in some way mm-hmm. to say, so-and-so who's running agrees with you that taxes should be lower, so-and-so, you know, found that hot button. And that turned out another group of people who now had a message from us that candidate should be supported. So the goals of Oregon Faith and Freedom are really twofold. One is to set up the educational side that would create a 36-county organization where various volunteers stood up and said, I want to have a meeting here, and there could be strategies that we would use to get out and talk about why you would want to join a county chapter. Mm-hmm. And that could mean that we would host meetings around the state to start that up. But then once that was going, we would hope that people would align to that. And then that would help educate people so that now they would know, what can I do when I go back to my church and, you know, I want to encourage people to be involved in this process? I can, you know, what can I do? I can have a voter registration mm-hmm. reminder, mm-hmm. you know, a non-partisan, but just, you know, encourage people to do that. Maybe I could have even a Sunday school lesson that would talk about a Christian's place in society and how mm-hmm. they can involve and mm-hmm. encourage people. So we'd have an educational side going that would be at a 36-county level, that would somehow get down to the, you know, helping individuals stand up for their faith and
kind of a grassroots effort.
Yeah, grassroots effort, and that would feed hopefully into various other things that people would realize I need to be doing. Then on the other side, I would want to have a continuing process of looking to identify and grow our lists.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go back, you know, if somebody said, hey, you have an unlimited amount of money to use, I would want to say, let's help the Oregon Republican Party match that list of 277,000 to the voter file. So now we know who those are. And if they end up being like the one that I polled, we're going to find probably 100,000 people who are low voter turnout people that, if they were now motivated to vote, could change things because they are zero ones and twos. And a group of people who are also not identified as conservative in that they're unaffiliated voters who wanted to recall the governor, or they're sometimes Democrats who wanted to recall the governor. These could be people who, if they change their vote, you know, if we went back to the last election, we had that list, and we could have found another 100,000 people to vote, then we would have a different Secretary of State.
I think that we need to have also, so we talked about the grassroots effort, almost like champions, community champions who are going to stand and in a sense, educate their community, work within their churches and community organizations to say this is how you get involved, how you get engaged, kind of a boot camp in a sense on how to get involved and get out the vote effort in each county. Having that, then we have the list, we build this list. Then I think there's almost a third component that needs to happen in our state, and that's training up and identifying candidates and having schools, candidate schools, and how, what does this look like, and how do you balance that with your busy life and your business and all of those things. I think we need to work on that in a collaborated effort moving forward, and that's how we're going to be effective in getting leadership in our local communities, in our state, in our state house, and nationally, that line up with our values of our faith and freedom values.
And the fourth piece that would be identify is that once we had now these people engaged in educational side, we had these people who had been ID'd as potential. Now we could come to a candidate and say, you ought to run, because even though you're in a district where you only have, say, 12,000 Republicans and there's 15,000 Democrats, we've helped identify this other group of 7,000 conservative unaffiliated voters. You appeal to them, now you can win, and more people would run. And now, in the end, the final piece is, you know, somebody's got to put together the ground game that happens between when the ballots arrive and when people file them. And
exactly.
Of course, the end solution to our whole problem of what's happened with this election is going back to an election day and somehow
showing up at the poll with our ID.
Right, and so that we know we have a bona fide result.
Yes, and we've got someone on the phone. I'm going to bring up our phone line, and I want to encourage you to join the conversation, 503-589-1220, and we'll see here who's on the line with us. Good morning. Thank you for joining the conversation. How are you today?
Fine. Great. How about you?
Good. Who am I talking with today?
Oh, your dog is Lou Barris.
Hi, today. Lou.
And I'm listening to you and Jeff, but I'm here in Clackamas County, though, and got a hold of your telephone number here.
Well, thank you for calling. Yes, thank you for calling. Tell us what's going on with you today.
Well, this election here today has probably caused people to have a little heartburn here, and but we know the Lord's in it, and the big thing is, like Jeff was talking there a little bit here, we need to get involved personally, and how do we get some of the people involved, especially some of the older people and the younger people? I think the younger people need to be educated, like you've been talking there, and some of the older people need to be kind of discipleship people to help the younger people.
You're exactly right. In fact, Lou, Saturday, at the rally that we had at the Capitol, the Don't Steal Our election rally. There was a gentleman that was newly elected, I believe, to the Canby Council. And he stood up and he said, look, you know, we've got to do something different. And we're a younger generation. We are going to do it different. And it was very, very good. And you make great, valid points, Lou. Thank you so much for joining the conversation this morning. Have a great morning.
Thank you.
So you're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. We're going to continue the conversation, and I want to ask you, Jeff, a couple questions about what Lou stated when we get back from this, okay? Because I think he's really on to something about engaging our younger new voters in the process. Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. We'll be back after this. Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Glad to be hanging out with you on this terrific Tuesday. I'm Stacey Ann. Thank you for tuning in and thank you for calling in. And I want to go with you, Jeff, and talk to you a little bit about what Lou mentioned in his phone call in the last segment. You know, how do we engage the younger generations? How do we make it interesting for them to want to get engaged? And I honestly think, and here's my putting on my grassroots hat that I've had in the past and looking at it from a helicopter view. And of course, I have fresh eyes coming into Oregon because I haven't been here for 30 some years, right? So I have all my background in grassroots organization and working politically in nonpartisan way back in South Dakota and doing some things in ministry and things. And I'm looking at Oregon and I'm thinking, right now, this law and order issue is a hot button. Mm-hmm. The schools is a hot button. And I firmly believe here in Oregon, it seems when you look at the back of my car and all the stickers, in fact, I had someone make a comment to me, it's like the women were running this year. You know, there were a lot of women candidates running this year. And so I had a lot of gals on the back of my car and their stickers and their, Kim Thatcher and Denise mm-hmm. Bowles and Danielle Bethel and certainly Ryan Corser and Joe Ray Perkins. I had mm-hmm. all of their stickers on my car. And then I had President Trump. And so I think women have a huge influence in voting in their households. And they're in you know, the grandma mama in the grandma in the family. They have a lot of influence over how their children vote as well. And so how do we connect, and it's interesting because that isn't always the case of the places I've lived. And I'm seeing this here in the communities and when I'm talking to people. And so these moms that are feeling really upset about their kids in school, they're more prone to get active than ever before. And so how do we reach that? And we heard this nationally, the suburban housewife or the suburban mom, you know, and is Trump going to pull that woman in or not, or offend her or whatever? You know, I think there's some truth and validity to that. And even when I'm watching these riots or protests, quote unquote protests,
which are largely
women, and they're young women. They're, and I saw it even this weekend. The group of agitators, I'll call them. I don't know if they're Antifa. I don't know what group they are affiliated with, if they're with a group, but they definitely were against the Trump mm. people.
And they always mention that they're largely nonviolent. Mm. Of course, there is a part that's violent. Somebody's burning something somewhere.
Right. And these gals were agitators. I don't know if they were violent or not, but they came with a big old chip on their shoulder and attitude. And they were little things. They weren't very big, you know. They're just tiny, but they were geared up and they were ready for battle, mm-hmm. you know, and the way they were dressed and their attitude and all of that. And so how do we engage the younger generations? How do we make it relevant to them that these ideas, the ideas of the Republican Party and the conservative values, is not an old school, outdated thought? Because the media, television, music, all of the arts, you know, make it sound like it's an us and them. It's a younger generation, which has happened for generations. We know this was happening in the 60s and in the 70s, mm-hmm. in the 80s, the 90s, and here we are, right? So what do we do about that?
Well, I found that this whole vaccine question about whether the government can come in and mandate and tell you how many vaccinations and when you're to have them, that brought in a lot of young people, mothers who felt like, hey, I'm the parent here. The government doesn't have a right to tell mm-hmm. me that. So I think that whole area of just talking to people about freedom and about the fact that you're the parent and you have parental rights and the government cannot infringe upon those, that's one thing that I saw bring a lot of people who weren't engaged or who were Democrats away from the side of where they'd typically been and say, hey, wait a minute, I have a choice. I'm the parent here. I want to have control over that. So I think we have to talk about freedom. I think maybe one of the silver linings that comes out of this pandemic is that a lot of parents are engaged in their education.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some of them will say, why am I sending my child to this public education system where now I see what they've been teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I find that I could homeschool more, so maybe more homeschooling would bring more freedom or more freedom of thought to that, because we have to understand, you're right, our entire culture has moved away from the Judeo-Christian worldview to the secular humanist, and that has captured, you know, our media, our entertainment, and our education.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say if you're a parent and you can get your child to homeschool or Christian school, they're going to talk more about freedom in those venues,
oh,
and your
I
children
agree.
Will end up aligned with you more, hopefully.
And what is the website again for people to get engaged and involved in what we're trying to do here this
Oregon
morning?
OregonFaithAndFreedom.org.
All right, we're going to open up the phone lines again. I think we have Art on the line. Good morning, Art. I know you were on last hour. Thank you for joining us and calling back in.
Oh, yeah. I thought I'd jump in real quickly. Okay. The way you get young people involved is you need to make them a part of the decision-making process.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they view things differently, but to allow them to be involved in the decision-making process with the appropriate guidance will get them more involved. I was very glad to see during this election the Young Republicans,
yes,
and the other organization, the one that are in the colleges, getting involved. And if you allow them to be a part of the decision-making process, then you open up the dialogue to have their perspective and our perspective. And then, of course, then you make decisions and make them part of that decision-making process. Because when they're involved in that way, obviously they're going to get an attitude that, hey, my thoughts and my interpretations are a part of this decision-making thing, and that gets them engaged.
I agree, Art. You're spot on. When we get the students and the young people involved, the young parents involved, and find out, hey, how are these decisions and elections affecting you? And I think you had said, Jeff, that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And here in Oregon, for 30-some years, you know, if we could get the message out in a call and ask what the hot-button issues are, and we could say, you know, that for the last 30 years, do some educating. Last mm-hmm. 30 years, the same elected officials, you know, and it seems like it's going to be the same way again in the next couple years. What would make you vote differently, or what are the issues you would like to see some change in, and identify that, then we have our messaging, don't we?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think our messaging around freedom,
yep,
would go a long way.
Get out there, get involved. So one more time, what's our website?
OregonFaithAndFreedom.org.
Okay, get involved, friends. Certainly you can email me, Stacey, Stacey, @KSLM.news. We'll stay connected and be listening, because I think here in the near future, we're going to work on putting together a face-to-face meeting where we can talk about some of these issues and get a strategy moving forward and build that alliance. Jeff, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day. Yeah, it goes fast, doesn't it?
It does.
Well, friends, have a wonderful day. Thank you for tuning in again. I want to remind you to find us on Facebook at KSLM Radio. And certainly, this will be up on a podcast later on. Share with your friends and family. Let's get connected and let's move together. Let's move Oregon forward, all right? Have a wonderful day.